wanna be down with the king.
Welcome to The Bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, featuring John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I love being around them.
Get involved by phone at 713-780-3776. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, the kings of Houston sports radio, John and Lance.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. John and Lance. I am still in Chicago. We decided to stay. We're going to go to the game today. Lance, big game four here as Lance McCullers is going to take the mound. The weather is clearing up. It rained really hard here yesterday, but they're going to get the baseball in. You know, hopefully they had the tarp on, and it might be a little bit sloppy out there. It was still raining last night, a little bit overnight, so hopefully that won't affect the game too much. What do you think? We got so much to talk about, man. You got John Gruden. He resigned. You got the Giants beating the Dodgers last night, 1-0. Boston moves on as they take that series, and they're in the ALCS against either the Astros or the White Sox. And, of course, we got all kinds of Texans talk. Coach Culley explaining some things that we'll have to get into here. Also, we got Jimbo Fisher going to be joining us in the next segment. You Aggie fans out there, hear from the coach who beat up the Giant on Saturday night. And Seth Wickersham, who wrote the book about the New England Patriots, he is going to be on at 7:30 with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 to talk about the book and the Bill O'Brien accusations. Well, that Bill O'Brien wanted to be fired. We'll talk to him about that and other stuff. So we got a busy, busy morning here. What do you think about Lance McCullers in this one?
I like it. I like it. I was, you know, why save him? Why not give yourself the two best chances you have, right? Why not go Lance and Fromber? Why not?
Yeah.
And if Lance is your best pitcher, which he is, why not put your best out there to try to knock it down right now? It's you know what? Here's what it is. You have two downs to make 1 yard. Let's just pretend you're Alabama and Bill O'Brien at the 1 yard line on third and goal from the one. With Brian Robinson. You know what? I'm going to hand to Brian Robinson behind Evan Neal, the top five pick of the draft, left tackle that they have. That's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to pass with Urquidy. I'm going to run the ball with Lance McCullers. And if I don't get it, I know I got Fromber on the next down, and I'll just quarterback sneak it with Fromber. That's what I'll do because I need 1 yard. So I'm going to give myself the best statistical chance to win that. And Lance is on a regular amount of rest. I think it's great. I love that Dusty, you know, made a good decision for once.
Here's the point. Now you would still have him for game five if you needed him. Of course, you're going to have Fromber on his regular rest for game five as well. But now you've pitched McCullers here. You're going to have McCullers less in the ALCS. Possibly he might be able to go in games 3 and 7. There's a possibility. You might want him available for game 7 if he was starting in game 1. You know, however that might work out. Lance McCullers is your ace, and you certainly would like to start with him against Boston, right? But there's no guarantee that you're going to get to Boston.
No. You got to win this. You can't get too cute, right? You got to advance.
McCullers, who has had his struggles on the road, not this year. He has been excellent on the road this year.
Right.
So this is, and he was excellent. Now, the thing that fears you a little, maybe scares you a little bit, is how good he was. They've seen him now 3 times through the order, and you just hope that, you know, they're not going to catch up with him at any point. And you got to worry a little bit because Robert is certainly hitting well right now. That's a concern. You got to always pitch around that guy. I think he's the most dangerous guy in that lineup, but he's going to move up in the order. You remember he batted down in the order in Houston, which was ridiculous. The next game he was up batting second in their order, and right. The more you get that guy to the plate, the better off you're going to be, and that's what they've been doing lately. But you know, I agree. I like the move. Let's get done with it. You start if you're going to do it. Fromber will start game one, which is just fine. You're going to have to rely on Urquidy though. You're going to need him in this next series. I would have him ready behind McCullers, no?
Urquidy?
Yeah.
Yeah, why not? Right? Why not? I mean, he's ready to roll yesterday Why wouldn't you have him ready to go? I mean, here's the only negative, John. The only thing I can think of is it depends on what you mean by behind him. What if McCullers goes high pitch count? Nah, it's still okay. I think the amount of pitching you would. Here's my thing. If Urquidy comes in behind McCullers, let's say McCullers threw five innings, he threw 96 pitches, he's out, you know, and the Astros are winning 3-2, right? And then Urquidy comes in. Because let me tell you something. I ain't going to Graveman. I'm going to guys that I trust. And it ain't right now Graveman. It's pretty much nobody in the bullpen.
Well,
just because I've watched too much playoff baseball at the Astros bullpen. It's just I don't trust people. I trust Urquidy.
The good news is you got some rest for Yimi so that he's ready.
Okay, shut up.
In a game situation.
He should be. You know what this should be? I said this when we were watching at the party the other night. This is going to be like it was with, well, I hope. I mean, but Dusty, because I remember thinking, man, AJ just has so much faith in these guys. Dusty's the same way, and maybe even worse. But you remember when Ken Giles basically, it got to a point where it was so bad when the fans were groaning when they would bring him in, that basically he was knocked off the World Series roster in the middle of the World Series. They basically took him off the roster without taking him off the roster. To me, that's got to happen with Yimi. He's basically got to be off this roster. You have 12 pitchers. My God, get through a game without going to the worst pitcher in your bullpen?
Again, this is what click. Again, he's got to take these toys away from Paul Paul.
How do you do that, John? He's on the roster.
Because Yimi's not on the roster then the next
But then you have to tell him if you move on, you have to tell him, listen, if you put him on the roster, we're going to fine you $250,000. It's the only thing you can do.
No.
Because he's a pawpaw.
Well, no.
You know what pawpaws do? Pawpaws don't care what you say. Pawpaws are at an age and they have FU money and they can just shut it down whenever they want to.
Well, here's what you do. You say, listen, Yimi's not available. He's off the roster. Odorizzi's, we're going to bring Odorizzi back.
Yep.
He's going to be on the roster. So you can go to Odorizzi. You don't go, you can't go to Yimi because he's not on the roster. Remember, he's no longer with us. Yimi is no longer with us, pawpaw. So you can't go to him anymore.
Right? Would you would you have it Lance or Kitty? Because what if you go six with Lance? Would you go to Kitty seven? Because here's what I would do. Yes. Because I would rather see Jose or Kitty than I would see any of those bullpen guys. Not Maton, not Rayleigh, not Graveman. I don't want to see anybody but Jose or Kitty if they have a lead. I don't want to see anybody.
Yeah,
nobody.
Yeah. And you know what? And if he's good enough for you to be a starter, he's your fourth starter, he's certainly good enough to come in. And this crap, I don't know about pulling a guy in the middle of an at-bat like he did like he did to Garcia the other day. Two balls and he decides he's going to go to the pen and bring in Yimi. Oh, my gosh.
Well, I think he just felt like he was done. Like Garcia was absolutely done and you're getting ready to have three men on instead of two. Now, Yimi, there was no... Why you even warm him up? I have no. But I thought Yimi was off the roster. So did you. We didn't think he even make the roster.
No, and he's not only he makes the roster. He's
been
in
three.
In
he's been in twice. He's been in two or three games.
Yeah. So like this thing, like AJ with Cole. Well, we're not going to bring him in the middle of an inning because that would be like Cole has never pitched with somebody on base. He's your best guy. And listen, and he might feel that way about Urquidy too. Well, he's a starter, so we want to bring him in fresh. We would never bring him in with a runner. It's not like these guys have ever. They've got runners on base all the time while they're pitching. What is the big deal with them? He's got to have a clean inning, a clean start. No, he doesn't. If Urquidy is your best arm, bring him in with two on in the seventh. Okay, that's fine. Just do it.
I look at all these as win in advance games, like by all means necessary, by everything at your disposal, because it's a 5-game series, not a 7-game series. And right now it's a 2-game series.
Well, this is what he did though. So I got to give him credit. Last year in the postseason, you know, he used Garcia like this. He used Urquidy like this. So, you know, we got to believe that Paul's going to make the right decisions. His decision making has been a little bit. We're a little disgusted with some of his decisions, but we got to believe that he's going to do the right thing by all of us today.
Why? Why would you believe that when he went to Yimi after he gave up the run?
Because he can't go to because somebody had to tell him. Hey, I don't know if you've seen Yimi all year.
Who
has sucked?
Who told him? He sucked all year. No one told him before then.
The only person in the world that would have put Yimi in that situation is the guy making the decisions.
This isn't even about Yimi to me, though, John. This is about going to a starter with some balls in Urquidy. Yeah. And I'm saying, we're just saying if it comes down to it. Look, if it gets to the seventh inning, he's going to the bullpen. He's not going to Urquidy. You know that, right? He's not going to go to Urquidy. He's going to go to his bullpen. He's going to do exactly what he always does. And at some point, Scary Graveman is going to have to get out there and try not to pitch so scared and try not to act like he's terrified of the moment. I mean, I've really had a concern with him watching him late in the season because he just looks nervous and unsure of himself right now.
He's not the same guy he was.
Oh, the three they traded for? The afterthought, Maton is right now pitching better than the other two.
That's sad.
But, we do have a lot to get to there. What time is the game today?
Yeah, but we got Jimbo next right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
How about Do they
Jimbo?
Have any news? Is there anything to talk to him about?
How about $100,000 less because they got fined for the storm in the field? How about that?
That was stupid.
Okay.
How mad are you that you're Arkansas and you got popped for $250,000?
Yeah. Arkansas got clipped for $250,000?
They got $250,000 after the Texas storming, after storming the field and beating Texas week one.
Well, because
A&M,
you know,
only got $100,000.
Because that's ridiculous to storm the field after you beat Texas, okay?
That's probably why.
So you're saying the SEC is okay as long as you beat Alabama.
Listen, one was a 7-point favorite, $250,000. 18-point favorite, it's $100,000.
Yeah.
If Vanderbilt wins a 31-point favorite, there's no fine. There's no fine at all. You can storm.
Everybody else will chip in and pay them?
You can storm. Yeah.
All right, when we come back, Jimbo Fisher joining us right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Right now, though, I'm talking about Doc Linville. I'm talking about hair. I'm talking about you having hair again, okay? Now, if it's thinning, like Joel got the front done there. I had a giant 9-iron divot out of the back of my head that Doc filled in for me. Jake Asman, he's a young guy, and he just, you know, I want to have better hair. I mean, I don't want to go through the rest of my life without hair. I mean, remember when you were young and vibrant, you had hair, and it was awesome. Well, you can have hair again because that's what Doc Linville do. He do it every day. He's got a great staff. He's got great people working for him. The process is simple. You're going to love it. Why be bald when you don't have to? It's basically painless, and in about 8 months or so, it'll all start growing in, and you'll go, my goodness, this is awesome. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com. That's 975hair.com. Tell Doc Linville you heard it right here on ESPN 97.5.
G'day, mates. This is Sam Windsor of the Houston Sabercats. When I'm not playing rugby, I'm listening to John and Lance on the bench. Go Sabercats.
CarsForKids.org.
Found the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Lance Erline, and live from Chicago, here's John Granato.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're home for the Aggies, and what a game on Saturday night. If you couldn't be there, if you couldn't see it on TV, hope you listen to it right here. Every exciting moment of it, and the head coach is joining us right now, brought to you by Damaris Barbecue here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coach, welcome to the show, man. Congratulations. How getting off that field, what was it? What was the euphoria? What was the it looked like it was just chaos down there after that football game.
It was. I mean, everybody was excited, and I was just trying to get over and, you know, trying to get to Nick and, you know, congratulate Nick, shake his hand and all that. And all of a sudden, I didn't quite realize until I got out, you know, in the middle of it. I never just said where, so they got us through. The people were really nice, and the people just got excited.
It was awesome, Coach. Congratulations. Coach, did it surprise you a little bit how well Zach was able to play in that football game?
Well, he had practiced better. He had, and there was a lot more people don't realize there was a big improvement in the Mississippi State game from the previous game, but not – but still left plays on the field. He knows that. And then, you know, just we got him in the groove early, and he had practiced well, and he had a good look at his eye. He was very relaxed, and I don't say surprised me, but I was very pleased that, you know, he's made the progress. Now we got to keep making progress because there's still some things we got to, you know, we can still do better.
Coach Jimbo Fisher with us, head coach of Texas A&M. And, Coach, man, that I mean, you know, I love the offensive line play. That has been a unit that has not stepped up and played to their ability, I didn't think, up until this point. And all of a sudden, boy, what a game. What a game on the ground. And I thought they did a great job of protecting Zach Calzada. He looked comfortable in the pocket. He sat in there. He played with poise. But really, I thought, what a great job your tackles did of holding up the edge and really creating nice pockets for Zach to work from.
They did. I mean, we did inside. We did two things, I think. They did a good job with the footwork. They understood where their help was. They passed the twist, and they took the proper angle. When they had to set vertical, they set vertical. When they had to kick, they kicked. And I think also our backs and tight ends did a really nice job of chipping and setting edges and helping. And we could chip back in, fall back inside, and they could get back on the rush. And I think we kept it mixed up a little bit there. And, you know, them playing well before, I mean, it's I don't mean this in a crazy way. It's hard to play well when you're a true freshman.
Right.
And, you know, you're thrown into a thing by the second, third game of the year, and you know everything that happens. And we had two true freshmen starting there. Blake Trainer's basically still a freshman in his development of where he was. Aki is when he's back in there. So, I mean, you get so many young guys, and, you know, offensive line takes so much precision and timing and recognition and everything there. And even Layton, who's a first-time starter. So, I mean, we still got tons of room to put. There's still angles, understanding our zone steps of, you know, how we're working to our back end when we truly double-teaming with a guard and a tackle, and when the tackle's got to come back and work with the tight end and help set the edge and the C-gap. And you know, there's so many things that we still have to clean up, and that's the encouraging part. We're still, I mean, you watch the film, we could play much better, but their ability to compete at that level and block the guys they block and not give up a sack on the night. Not give up one sack on a night to guys who can rush, and they bring a multitude of blitzes. I was extremely pleased with the physical.
And speaking of physical, Coach, your defense was on the field for it was unbelievable. It looked like they played great, Coach. They gave up over 500 yards. They were on the field for 82 plays, especially in that second half. It felt like they were on the field the entire second half.
They were. We couldn't get off the field on third down. They kept hitting big plays, and we give up third and long. We still give up a couple third and longs. They got to get cleaned up. The two things they did I thought was outstanding in the game. Even though they gave up some plays, when we got to the red zone, tight zone, they really tightened up, forced field goals, created a turnover in the red zone. As I say, they minimized the damage. They didn't let it get too bad. And then got the huge three and out in 2 minutes in that regard. So, and I thought they played really good. Even Mike and I were talking about, I thought we played really good, didn't get caught up in the score of the game until it was 31-27, 31-30. I thought we made a couple mental errors that we hadn't made the whole game and had to do a better job. And offensively, we should have helped it because we got backed up once, then we got a penalty on a third down, then we drop a ball and, you know, have a ball we could hit. Then there was another one we could have stuck in there, and we didn't get our third down conversions in the third quarter, and we didn't run it quite as well. And then we came back to life with the two big-time drives. But they got the big-time three and out on the two-minute drive. It left us 2 minutes in the clock, and we were able to go down in each clock and then get the field goal. So, you know, I thought it was a very complimentary victory on both sides of the game that they played toward each other. Also, they got the big turnover on Robinson on the fumble, too. So they created two turnovers. That's the first turnover we've had in like 3 weeks. And, you know, turnovers are critical. You got to get them on defense. So,
yeah.
So I thought they arched out, and we got better at the front. But up front, we played very physical.
Listen, you don't beat Alabama. Alabama's a hell of a team. You don't beat Alabama without doing certain things. One of them is you win a turnover battle. The other thing is you win a third phase. And when Alabama went down and scored and took a little bit of the breath out of the crowd, boy, A-Chain's touchdown, I mean, you can't say enough about what that did to the crowd and to re-energize again.
For them to give up how many times do you give up a block for a touchdown to win a game?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen. That's right. Something we got to get clean. Which we made, but then we responded right back on special teams, and they left one in there, and we blocked it well, and he hit it, and I mean, it was, you know, it was a well-executed play. That's what I was, we made plays. It wasn't a game where they didn't make plays. It was a game where both teams made plays. That's what encouraged me about our players, and even when we got down 38-31 and not scored for four drives, to come out and just take it straight down the field and score again to tie it up, then get a stop, then get a two-minute drive. I mean, listen, you'd rather stay ahead the whole game, but the way it did hook, but some growth and confidence about how to play the upcoming games the rest of the season.
Hey, Coach, I want to give you some congratulations also and give you some credit, and I know the broadcast did it as well. I thought the play calling early on, you know, one of the things you had to do was get Zach Calzada comfortable, and that's not easy to do right now. Yeah. I mean, it hasn't been. you did a great job, and I know the broadcasters mentioned some of the way you schemed it up, of getting some call. Can you walk us through when you prepped the prep sheet and the call sheet? And I don't know if you had them scripted or I don't know how you do it. Can you walk us through how you set up the first few passes of the game so that you could get him rolling?
Well, I mean, I think we wanted to, as an Alabama, in today's time, because they're so supportive and so sound, we had to mess with the back end to create some space, reduce our splits down a little bit to help our receivers to create some more space. And then the rotation and the run game, but how they had to fit safeties, which would keep eye violations off. And then we wanted to not have him stationary at the same point. We wanted to move him to the launch point and create one-on-ones outside with some double moves that allowed us to get some time and then let him, because his arm is so strong, not be, you know, trying to be, let's do what he does well, find it, get on the edges. We got some nice throws down there. Then we hit some nice, and then mix in the play actions as they're rotating safeties down and have things that really fit into him. And he could set, have vertical outlets that also got it out of his hand very quickly to a number two. And then also dumping and hitting, moving guys on third routes, whether it was the little flares or the little motion guys we had or a quick crosser, and just get it out of his hand and find it, you know, and what he did. And he was, here's the easy thing. You can draw all those up and say they're all easy, but at the end of the day, he's got to go do it. And he's the one who went out and executed. We, you know, and I try to work with him a lot. I give those guys a ton of input in the first 15 plays and also calls we like. You, all right, and then we'll debate this. We got to have this one. We'll learn to practice it, but I like that one, Coach. I like that one. We try to get him in that rhythm. So it's things he likes to do. And we tried to move the launch point, create some double moves, create some time for him where he could relax and let that arm out, and then get balls, have things that could get out of his hand with the quick motions of our rotation that we were running out of.
Coach Jimbo Fisher with us here on your home for the Aggies, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, brought to you by Damaris Barbecue. Coach, what did Zach tell you when you followed him into the tent? It looked like he was done. And he came back out and was heroic. What was that exchange like?
Well, first of all, I wasn't talking to him because players always say they're okay. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Dan. I said, Dan, and he said, from what we did, and our trainers and our doctors, the doctor's going to look at him. Dan said it didn't feel like there was any movement. It was something that, you know, he just got the collapse of the bones, more of a bruise or a sprain type situation. Now, they had to determine how loose it was or whatever. And it turned out it was fine. I mean, it was just the way it came down. And hit it, and I think I want them, you know, if you guys are going to play in the game, you make sure there's no way they can ever risk any more structural damage. You get banged, you get bruised, and then the doc came out and said that was right. And I said, well, Zach, hey, please, Coach, I'm ready to go. I feel good. Just the way it did there, it just scared me and got me down, and I'm fine. So then it was just, like I thought, hey, I said, this is quarterback. My quote to him, now you become a quarterback. So everybody thinks quarterback is throwing the ball. Everybody thinks quarterback's handing the ball off and getting on. No, it ain't. Quarterback is leading your guys down the field when you're battered, you're bruised, you're hurting, and they see their leader get up off the ground after he just threw a touchdown or made a big play for you and willing to go back into that battle. And it changed the psychological disposition of the team to understand, listen, that guy can stand back there and take shots and have people hit me. I can play. I can strain and gut myself out in these tired, tough situations and protect him or go get the ball back on defense. And to me, that's where quarterbacks are made. And that's when your team starts to become a team. And the psychological disposition that we got a leader that's going to fight, scratch, and claw and be one tough son of a gun, we got to be. And I think it helps us grow as a team. And with young players seeing that, hopefully it helps us and hopefully it carries us in the future.
Well, that was just an unbelievable. Coach, great, great, great win. What is it? Is there anything that it does for the program?
Here's what it does. People say it means a 4-2 and got to get ready to play Missouri, which is a very tough place to play. That's what it means. But it also does mean this. It's like when we didn't do things well, we're studying why we didn't do them or practice them. All right, now, we did things well in this game and things we still got to fix. But why was your psychological disposition ready to compete here? How would you prepare to play this game? How did you do this? The things you also got to repeat when you're successful. And I think it does. It gives you the confidence you can play with the best people in the country and play them out. Because that wasn't a game where one team was totally off and one team. That was two teams that went at it nose to nose and competed, and we were able to make one more play. And they're a great football team. A well-coached team, they're a great team, we know that. But now, how do you do that? How do you got to repeat that. Sometimes you tell kids when they play, they don't know they don't know. They just haven't been in the side. And that's been a problem with us this year because 9 guys out, and we're playing so many, I mean, 5 or 6 true freshmen. And that's not an excuse, but they don't know they don't know how to, when you're saying do this and do that, and they think they are. Now maybe they start to understand the level of which it has to go to, and then I can repeat that, and I can have the same preparation during the week, physically, mentally, and psychologically. And then when I hit the field, the levels of competition I have to raise my game to be able to compete. And I hope that's what we'll learn from it.
Jimbo Fisher, right here, every week on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coach, congratulations. What a great win. That was the best game of the season by far, an instant classic. And we can't be happier for you. Congratulations.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me. Oh, hey, hope it'll pay off. Now the important thing is we got to repeat this up in Missouri.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep. Thanks, Coach.
There's Jimbo Fisher every week right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Seth Wickersham is next. He wrote the book, It's Better to Be Feared, in which he says Bill O'Brien was trying to get himself fired. We'll talk to him about that and more. But first, Lance and I are going to talk a little bit about Aqueduct Plumbing. They're at your disposal. They're here for you now. What do you need done? Have you looked at do you have copper pipes? Well, they can repipe your house. It's the home of the one-day repipe. If you're looking for, and it doesn't have to be a big job like that, but here's the deal. Any job that you've got some problem, anything that's going on over there, they will come to your house absolutely freelance, and they are going to do the work. They're going to give you an honest estimate, going to give you a great estimate, and you are going to get those people to do that job.
They were out quickly to our house to take care of a big clogged up. We thought it was going to be a much more serious issue. They got it done, taken care of very, very quickly. Listen, they can do the hydrostatic testing if you think you may have a leak. They can do the repiping, as John mentioned, in a day. They can install tankless water heaters. They do the camera inspection. They can work on new gas piping. They can work on new construction for you. Plumbers do so much, and you can see their services right there on their website at thebenchplumbing.com. Go to thebenchplumbing.com. You can get your free quote right there online for whatever work you need done, thebenchplumbing.com.
The Houston Astros look to close out the Chicago White Sox in Game 4 of the ALDS. First pitch today at 1:07. Now back to the bench. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Lance Erline. And live from Chicago, here's John Granato.
Welcome back on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Bringing in Seth Wickersham, now senior writer from ESPN. He has written the book, It's Better to Be Feared. It's about revelations about the New England Patriots organization, the Belichick-Brady, their relationship, and there's some Bill O'Brien in there, and that's what caught our interest here in the city of Houston. Seth Wickersham joining us here. Seth, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Wonderful. The book is out today, right?
It is. Here it is.
How excited? This has got to be an exciting day for you.
Oh, man, it's an exciting day, maybe a merciful day, too. It's finally out.
It must seem like forever, the whole process. I mean, you've obviously been reporting for years and years, and you get to do short-form stuff. How about the long-form process of writing a book?
Well, it's really fun, and, you know, I'm fortunate at ESPN that, you know, doing investigative work, they give me a lot of time and space to try to chase after things, and, you know, a book's like that only on a larger scale, and so, you know, both of them are really, really cool, and, you know, it is a relief to finally have it out.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to reading this because I think the Patriots, you know, when everything started to leak out about the three-way issue that Kraft and Brady and Bill Belichick were having over 20 years, there's just no question that marriage is going to have some stories to it and some strains. And what was that like digging into it and really nailing down the many, many storyboarding issues that you're going to have to get to when it comes to writing a book like this that's so expansive?
Yeah, you know, at the time, I was one of the people who was reporting on it at the time. And so I think that for me, it was like taking what I had learned back in, you know, 2017 when a lot of the cracks in the foundation really started and just trying to, you know, dig deeper on it for the book and apply it within the larger context of what they were trying to do. But there was no question that in 2017, after the Falcons Super Bowl, where the Patriots, you know, beat the Falcons down in Houston, the dynamic in the building just changed. Tom Brady, you know, wanted to be more than just a quarterback for the Patriots. He really started marketing his TB12 business. You know, Alex Guerrero was in the middle of it, and you know, that was causing problems. And, you know, he did his Tom versus Time documentary on Facebook, of which the Patriots had only nominal awareness. And finally, he wanted a contract that guaranteed him to play until he was 45 years old, which is his long-stated personal and business goal. And you know, that's where a lot of the problems, you know, that year started. And it kind of culminated in the middle of the season where Tom Brady said, I don't want to play for Bill anymore. And, yes, Bill O'Brien kind of made an odd cameo in that entire mix.
Tell us about that.
Well, Bill O'Brien and Tom Brady got along very well when they worked together. And, you know, like I said, Brady wanted to be more than just a quarterback, and he wanted some input into the offensive system, or more input. And he wanted, you know, some input into maybe personnel. And he thought that someone like Bill O'Brien might be more amenable to that than Bill Belichick was, should Bill O'Brien ever be the head coach. And so it was kind of a weird night. But, you know, Robert Kraft and Tom Brady were talking, and they, at the time, it looked like Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator, was going to leave for a head coaching job. So who would replace him? And the idea that they kind of were tossing around was that maybe Bill O'Brien could replace McDaniels and then one day take over for Belichick if Belichick were to leave after that year. At the time, the Krafts didn't know whether Belichick wanted to continue coaching there. You know, and so, and you know, Brady would like that. You know, he would have liked working with O'Brien again. And so the entire thing was fanciful, but it got back to O'Brien. And if you remember, in December of 17, he was in a big fight in Houston, and a lot of people thought he was on his way out. And he ended up winning the kind of power struggle, and he later told a confidant that, you know, it was kind of an empty victory because, I was trying to get fired because he knew that, you know, New England might be open. As it turned out, of course, McDaniels didn't leave, and so nothing was really open anyway. But it was just kind of an interesting moment.
Is there any other place you think that is run like the Patriots? I guess maybe so. Mike Shanahan was famous for having kind of a lockdown facility, and he was the guy who was the head guy, and Belichick's got that. But it just seems like the Patriots building is just so, talking to scouts and former scouts, it's just so different than any place else.
Well, it's very different. And, you know, the irony, of course, is that it's created the closest thing that we've really seen towards, you know, a sustained, you know, team environment and sustained success when really the brain trust was very small. Like, you know, the system there has withstood the losses of key personnel and coaches and players and just kept winning. It makes you wonder if there ever really was a Patriot way, or if it was Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, two very special people who happened to be aligned for a really long time together. But, you know, it was a secretive place, and I think that it was more secretive than a lot of places. Like Nick Caserio, the new GM, obviously, in Houston, you know, Robert Kraft used to call him for updates on what was going on with the team because Belichick wouldn't tell Kraft. And sometimes Caserio didn't even have an answer for Kraft because Belichick didn't tell him either.
Yeah.
It's known to be, I talked to scouts too, Lance, that it's just so secretive. It's done differently than anywhere else. Seth Wickersham is with us here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. The book is out today. It's Better to Be Feared is the title of the book.
Such a mafia title.
Yeah, right? It is like a mob. And Belichick, Seth, how much of all of this money that they spent this offseason on free agents is Bill Belichick's ego having to win now that Brady won without him?
That's a great question. I don't have a great answer for it, and I don't know if, you know, even if you put fruit serum in Belichick, you know, what the answer would be. But it would just be naive to think that, you know, how the Patriots handled the offseason wasn't a reaction to what transpired. And, you know, the two people on this earth who should have known better than to ever underestimate Tom Brady are Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick, and yet they did just that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that we're seeing the real Tom Brady now. Not that we didn't necessarily with New England. Seth, have you been surprised or what are your feelings on seeing Gronk? And I can't turn the TV on without Gronk or Tom Brady being in a commercial. I mean, Brady on a Subway commercial. I would have never seen that with the Patriots. But, man, it's like he's truly living his best life now.
He is. And I think that when, look, August of 2019, the Patriots and Brady were again negotiating a contract. And again, he wanted a contract that took him until he was age 45. And again, the Patriots were not willing to commit to that. And so he, you know, almost walked out of training camp because he was so frustrated. But, you know, he ends up signing this one-year deal that allows him to be a free agent. And he and his wife put their house on the market 48 hours later. And I think that he just wanted to be more than a quarterback. Or not just a quarterback, let's just put it that way. So in Tampa, look at him. He is the quarterback of the team. He's the de facto offensive coordinator. He's a pseudo-personnel executive. Alex Guerrero, who, of course, had his, you know, access curtailed by Belichick. Belichick would go out of his way to make resoundingly clear that Guerrero did not work for the Patriots. Not only has an office in the Tampa Bay Bucs building, but got a Super Bowl ring. And you see Brady, you know, he's speaking his mind a little bit more. I mean, I still think that it's, you know, he's showing a little bit more personality. I still think that it's pretty mild compared to, you know, who Brady is. But, you know, I think that he's, you know, people go to Florida, you know, to enjoy, you know, retirement or whatever. He's obviously not retired, but he's clearly different than he was in New England. And I think that he's just more comfortable, you know, not being just an employee in a part of a system where the head coach really was the voice of the team and, you know, it was wildly successful and there was really no reason to change that.
Seth Wickersham, it's better to be feared. Out today. Out today. We really appreciate you hanging with us, Seth. Hope you have fantastic success with the book. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, gentlemen.
All right. Better to be feared by Seth Wickersham. Right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We are going to get back to Astros baseball as they head to Game 4 today, 1 o'clock, that you can hear right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Lance, TGS.
TGS Insurance makes sure that you have the best opportunity possible at paying less money for your homeowner's insurance. And I don't know how many times you've made a claim. I think I've made claims, homeowner's insurance, I don't know, maybe three times over the last 20 years, maybe just twice. But when you do, you want an A-rated company. You want somebody who has that A-rated insurance standard behind them. And so TGS Insurance only aggregates A-rated insurance companies, but what they do is they allow you to shop a variety of A-rated companies to get the lowest rate simply by texting the word money to 232323. Now, homeowners insurance can end up really skyrocketing out of control on you if you stay with the same company over and over and over. And you don't shop for, you don't shop prices. You don't look for competitive pricing. TGS Insurance allows you to do it within 15 seconds. That's right. You heard right. Within 15 seconds of texting the word money to 232323, you will have, within 15 seconds, a firm quote for A-rated homeowners insurance. The average savings is $900 annually or more. Make sure you text the word money right now to 232323. That's TGSinsurance.com.
You are listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5. This is The Bench with John Granato and Lance Erline on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Lance Erline, and live from Chicago, here's John Granato.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So, Ryan Tepera just started some BS the other day with his comments about the Astros and signs, and you know that there's something goofy going. Of course, the Astros did score six runs here. They did strike out a bunch. I don't know if you saw last night's game. The Giants struck out 14 times, Lance. They must have been cheating.
And the Astros scored six. No, was it five or six? It was five. The six. Astros scored five in two innings because cheated in – yeah. New Comiskey also, you
right.
know.
That wasn't it.
They road just, cheating also.
They were cheating at home, but not.
He's such an ass, and he's such a hole. He's both of them. No, I broke him up. I broke him up.
Well, he's kind of a Houston guy.
No, he's not. He's not a Houston guy.
Brazos would.
I don't give a – no, he's not a Houston – that's like an hour away from here. Number two, I don't care where you're from. I don't care where you're from. You're taking unsubstantiated shots at an organization. Because you were born in Brazos in Clute, just because you were born in Clute does not
Make sure give
you. You don't get a free pass here. No one wants you here. When you retire, retire somewhere else.
Love those people.
Retire somewhere else.
Here's
Dennis Lindsay's the only guy I'm caping for from Brazoswood. That's it.
Here's Dusty giving Ryan Tepera a little shot. I liked it.
I haven't heard anybody even talk about it, to tell you the truth. You know, he can say what he wants to say. I never even, heard his name before. You know, we played the White Sox. You know, like, I'm not bothered at all by it, really. Because, you know, most of my life they've been talking stuff on me anyway. You know what I mean? So let them talk.
Where's the other one where he drops his – don't we have the other one? I heard another one where he was – Brian T. Smith asked a question. He brought it up to him, and Dusty basically starts referencing an Eric Clapton song. He drops it. I was listening to Eric Clapton today, and do we have it? Here you go. Listen to this one, John.
Well, those are some heavy accusations, you know. I mean, we're about the same runs, OPS, and everything as we are. Well, actually better on the road than we are at home. And I think they're actually better at home than they are, you know, on the road. And so I don't have much, you know, response to that. Other than I was listening to Eric Clapton this morning, and he had a song, Before You Accuse Me, You Need to Take a Look at Yourself. You know what I mean? So that's all I got to say.
Get him, Dusty. Go get him. Go get him, Dusty.
Dusty called him heavy accusations. Mm-hmm. That's such a 1970s thing for Dusty to say. That's pretty heavy accusations.
He also pulled a Bill O'Brien on him. He was, I don't even know who he is. What does he do? Ryan Tepera, what does he do? What is he? Is he a front office guy?
I just was listening to Eric Clapton. I was listening to
Big Sean was listening today. To Eric Clapton.
I don't know. You just never know with old school guys. They have diverse tastes in music. He said, I would have liked it better if he said, I was listening to some Big Sean and like Big Sean said, I don't F with you. You little stupid ass. I don't fuck you.
Whoa, whoa,
you little
whoa.
Dumb ass. Whoa. You.
Wow.
That's what he could have said. I would have liked it if Dusty would have said, well, I was listening to my man Big Sean today. And he said this about Ryan Tepera. I hate that this is even a thing. Honestly, I don't even want to talk about it because it's just such a – it's a fake thing meant to garner – more talk, and now we're eating up these faux accusations from a guy who barely pitches, who's 32, 33. We don't even know the guy, and he's clearly just some guy who's yapping. I haven't heard anyone else co-sign that from the White Sox. I haven't heard anybody. Nobody. Have you?
No.
Because they're not going to. Because they're not stupid.
It's
one smart-ass nobody reliever yapping, and now Dusty's got to be asked questions by Brian T. Smith.
Yeah, jerk, a-hole. He's an A and a hole, you said.
Yeah, it's unbelievable that these guys keep this stuff alive because the Astros scored some runs. It's the same thing with the buzzer thing that John Boy did in 19. It's ridiculous, and they get life, and then all of a sudden people don't need any. In this day and age, you really don't need any proof. You don't need anything for things to just run wild.
No.
Buzzers. No. Guys had buzzers all over their bodies. That just took off. Now, you know, this Tepera guy, if somebody wants to jump on that, when the Astros score runs, they're obviously cheating now. So I don't even like giving it life because it's just such a bunch of garbage. It really is. You can't score runs now without you're obviously cheating if you score runs and get hits. So stupid.
Yeah. No, it is. And you know what? Let's go. Now, you know what? Hopefully it gives the, you know, not that they need any more, but I'd want to hear. I wanted Carlos to do his ear thing to that guy.
I've heard you know what? I talked to somebody yesterday who's, I don't know if you talked to your guy, but somebody texted me who's tight with people on that team who said they're pissed off about this. And I'm sure the number one red ass is Lance McCullers. If there's two guys who have the reddest of asses, it's McCullers and it's Alex Bregman. And somebody on Twitch said, they need to start Siri today. Well, I know the meaning behind that. Because if Siri does, if he happens to go yard, he will take 45 seconds getting a first. But I will warn you this: Tony La Russa is in the other dugout, so he will order a hit on Jose Siri. A hit will be ordered on Jose Siri.
If
he takes that long to get to first.
Oh, I hope he does. I hope he does. So what's your – is Yuli's really struggling. Yuli's struggling right now. You got to go with him, right? But any thoughts to maybe playing Diaz a game, getting Diaz out there at first base?
Why?
Well, Yuli doesn't look great at the plate.
No, but can you imagine benching the batting champ? That's going to look for Dusty when the national media gets
him.
That?
I'm just, you know what? You want to get some, you want to get Diaz some at bats.
Well, you're taking out a lineup.
What?
Well, you have to bench Yuli. You're not taking Yordan out. You're not taking Uncle Mike out.
No, you're not taking either of them out.
That's what I'm saying. I just Diaz just isn't going to play. That's how that's going to go. Maybe he'll pinch hit for Machete later in the game, but everybody. I just don't think he. Machete is just.
Get some at bats for God.
All I want from him is 25. Five pitches. Just take. You know what? I want you to foul off one, take a bunch of pitches. Can you just work the count to five pitches? That's all I ask. I'm not asking for anything more than that.
I'm just saying. You might want to get, something in. I don't know. Do something. You can't bench the batting champ. That's for sure. But. You certainly want to see it. You never know when the bats are going to get going, though. You never know. Yuli's struggling a little bit. Let's see, 12 at bats. He's got one hit in 12 at bats.
Yeah, not great. And he had a pathetic game one. Oh, no. Yeah, game
he
one.
Looked
game
awful
one, yeah.
Game one. Awful. He had some bad swings. But so did Tucker. Remember some of his swings in game one?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's okay, though. Tucker's all right. He's up to .333 now with four hits and 12 at-bats, and his OPS is .1250.
Yeah.
Yordan's OPS, .1458.
I think Yuli will. I think, I'm riding with Yuli. This is what happens. I mean, it's baseball. Let's just see what happens. When we come back, we'll continue to be hot and heavy on the Astros. We've got Rolando and Greg, you guys are going to be first up. At some point, we do need to get to – there is a new interim coach in the NFL. Mm-hmm. As John Gruden was he said he resigned. Basically, I'm sure it was a combination of the two. But John Gruden is out for some
Well, it's interesting, though, because
emails.
He says he resigned. Well, we'll talk about it on the other side.
Yeah.
Resigning and getting fired are two different things.
Oh, financially,
they owe him a lot of money
difference.
If they fire him.
Yeah, he resigned, which means the money is staying in Mark Davis's pocket.
Right. So, well, we guess. We don't know if there's any kind of settlement. If he just said, okay, I'll walk away, you give me this. But we'll talk about that, and we'll get you guys in here at 713-780-3776. Right now, though, I'm talking about Chastang Ford. Those are my people over at Chastang Ford. You know, I get to know the people that we deal with. We talk about, some of the other people. I talk about Doc Linville, great guy. We talk about Billy over at Aqueduct. I can't tell you how great a people the Chastangs are. I've known them for years now, and to start doing this with them, to buy my vehicle from them, I joined the Chastang family. That's what they said. They want you to join the Chastang family, and it really is. I mean, they care about you. They want to make sure that you're okay. I leased mine, and so when my lease is up, I'm gonna go back there. I'm gonna go back there because it's the best place I've ever bought a car. And this is, I'm telling you, you're dealing with a family, and it's like you are, like they're taking care of you as family. That's how they do business. They want to make sure that you're always going to be comfortable with your payments and that it's the right vehicle for you. Customize your deal right now at Chastang Ford, and I promise they won't add anything on while the other dealerships are going to hit you with add-ons. They don't do that at Chastang Ford. Or you can get to the dealership yourself. It's on 610 at Homestead, not Hempstead. It's just 5 minutes from downtown. It's Chastang Ford.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Hall of Fame, Billy Sims, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.